listeners, CAFOs are places where hog farms have let all the pollution of the pigs go into the waterways and destroy the waterways.
The density and scale of some farms is definitely at a level that the runoff and the manure management is as complex as any small city. It isn't necessarily treated that way.
It's really a horrible situation. And the fact of the matter is that when you add it all up, all of the impacts, again, I'm talking about everything from animal husbandry to effluent to into sensitive watersheds to decimation of rainforest to transportation of animal products, it's animal agriculture that is probably the largest contributing factor to global climate disruption outside of the realm of the oil economy and the transportation sector. And so, in fact, some people claim that it's actually larger than the entire transportation cycle.
Right.
But nobody wants to talk about that because nobody's giving up their, nobody's going to give up their meat. Nobody's going to give up their cheese.
It may not be nobody. I think the same way you recognize that it took a certain number of fires in the Cuyahoga River before people sort of woke up to it. And it may be that there's it's I think the tide is turning for people to recognize that
we're
facing it.
I mean, I've been a vegan vegetarian for 7 years now. I've been a vegan vegetarian. Greg was for 5 years, but then his health kind of made him have to do a little bit back the other direction. But, I don't know why you actually said that, being that you're married to a vegan, but...
Well, no, I think that it's... when I say no, but I'm speaking sort of figuratively.
Well, it's
the
a fact.
The fact is that vegans and vegetarians are definitely growing in numbers. There's no question about that. But I agree with you, Peter. I think that it's going to take something kind of monumental to cause people to realize that this is a major issue, that... Basically what it comes down to is that the affluent societies on Earth are putting a tremendous amount of pressure on environment, on ecosystems, just because of their absolute addiction to animal food, animal-based fruit foods, whether it's meat, poultry, fish. The products, the eggs and the cheese. I mean, and the other dairy products. And those things, even the ones that are supposedly the best ones, supposedly the, for example, the grass-fed, grass-finished, organically grown beef. When you talk in terms of it, that impact on just land and soil and watersheds, the impact is pretty huge. It doesn't make it a better choice environmentally, even though it may be a better choice for your health, because there's more omega factor in the beef.
Right. So there are the multiple the perspectives of health, community, energy intensity, climate, and as you indicated, runoff and. Forestry health. There are a lot of impacts to weigh in, and our consumptive lifestyles in the more developed or affluent societies, or most of them, includes things like throwaway water bottles. Water bottle uses 1,000 to 2,000 times as much energy as reusing your own water from the tap.
Here's a point that I really want to make, because of today being the day that the youth has gone out into the streets, that it is the children that will make things really matter, because it was during the civil rights movement when the young children were shot with water hoses, and young children were on the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee project with Ella Baker. And it was the children being seen on television that made a huge difference. And I'm hoping today is just the beginning of that because, you know, Greg and I have done work in schools for many years and still are doing science education, even for kids as young as 3 years old. We have a workshop called Growing Green. But we also have worked for many years songwriting with kids on the Chesapeake Bay. And we were just at the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center just a week ago singing with other artists that have also dedicated their lives to the history and the story of what's happening to the bay. And that's from, you know, as far back as you can remember to today. And we've also worked in the mountains with kids in Maryland, in the upper Cumberland Mountains. There was a huge situation that was going on, and we were involved in a two-year project up there where the whole community, and this is what we have to do, the whole community, from the youngest to the oldest, has to get involved in doing direct action to save our planet. What was happening there was they had mountaintop removal, which you couldn't see from the highway. All you had to do, though, was go down the back roads, and you could see it just clearly. And they had an electric company that was, you know, doing the usual, we're green, and building beautiful, gorgeous windmills that were on top of their mountains, blocking their vistas and views. And to some degree, that's not a problem, but all the energy was not going to Cumberland, Maryland, or the Allegheny community there. It was going to North Carolina. So the utility company was sending all that down there instead of helping this very rural, and this is environmental injustice. The poor, the people of color, all these communities are suffering because they don't have the money to stop these huge corporations from doing exactly what I'm talking about. Well, after 2 years, the kids had worked with the seniors and the whole community there, and we wrote songs, and we made quilts with pictures of things that we cared about, and we had all kinds of community involvement in trying to stop stuff. And there's a beautiful film about it called Wherever Rivers Flow, which is the song we wrote with the seniors and the children, that after 2 years, they were able to stop some of it and get some of the energy back, at least through the windmills.
And the value of the value of the experience of bringing people together and through quilts, through song, through discussion, recognizing their common livelihood, their common community, and looking for a vision of what kind of future they want, and then working toward it. That's that practice and that support that you provided to nurture that just sounds like a great example of what we need to continue to try and repeat.
Yeah.
What was it called, Greg? They had a name, something Visions. Do you remember what it was called?
It was the
community.
One vision, many voices.
And that's what we all have to do. We all have to have the same vision to save this planet and to do it community by community if we have to.
Or ultimately bring our visions together to form one vision for a sustainable future. It's a kind of a frustration in a lot of ways because, when we talk about global climate disruption, and we use the term climate disruption, because to us, the term climate change is just too damned benign. It's not benign. There's nothing benign about it. It's disruption, and in fact, if you wanted to get more specific and more actually correct about it, it's anthropocentric climate disruption.